Our first case for argument is 22-2041, Avago Technologies v. Netflix. Mr. Young, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Dan Young with Quarles & Brady, representing Avago Technologies. This case involves the Board's finding that the prosecution history of the 976 patent, the Betz patent, and related evidence to that prosecution history is irrelevant to its decision that the second limitation of Claim 1 was disclosed by the Maurer-Hayes reference.
Is this a claim construction issue?
Your Honor, it is the application of the plain and ordinary meaning of a term in light of the intrinsic evidence, including the prosecution history. So yes.
Yes?
I mean, it's the application of the plain and ordinary meaning of the term. The Board did not expressly construe, nor did the parties ask the Board to construe, the second limitation of Claim 1 of the patent, and the Board applied the plain and ordinary meaning. And as the case law of this Court says, that the plain and ordinary meaning is informed by the intrinsic evidence of the patent, including the specification and the prosecution history.
What's your claim construction?
The claim construction is that the term means exactly what it says, and the Board applied that construction in the prosecution history to distinguish a reference called Pruitt. And
so, but what I would have thought you would say that there was some claim construction based on what happened with Pruitt in the prosecution history, but you're saying you're not offering a claim construction.
Well, the claim, Your Honor, the one at issue is that the what was added during prosecution history during prosecution was during the selection process, the selected server being selected independent of input from a requesting application subsequent to selection of the web service. And so that means exactly what it says. There's no client input during the selection process. And so a person of ordinary skill reading the prosecution history, reading the patent, would understand that. And the patent discloses two different types of systems. And if you look at the patent, figure 1 and figure 2 describes that difference. And so the way the claim was originally written, claim figures 1 and figure 2 would be encompassed by that selection process. But when the and when you look at figure 2 of the figure 2 of the 976 patent, you'll see that the requesting application is butting up right against the web services, right? So that in that situation, the client with the requesting application would be making the selection and would have input. Whereas in figure one, there is a proxy server.
That's not the way we do claim construction. We don't compare a piece of prior art that was considered in prosecution with another piece of prior art. You know, you look at the language, you look at the specification, you look at the prosecution history. People offer competing claim constructions, and based on the process and what's available, we come up with a claim construction, but you're not asking for that. You're asking us to shortcut the whole thing by comparing one piece of prior art to another.
Oh, no, Your Honor. We're not asking for anything different or unique in this case. We're not applying the prosecution history in a disclaimer or waiver context. It's simply that oftentimes in construction, you'll want to say that the term actually means this. In this case, the term means exactly what it says. And the client, the requesting application, does not have input in the selection process. And when the examiner looked at Pruitt, the examiner applied it exactly the same way, exactly what the plain ordinary meaning is. The plain ordinary meaning does not just mean the terms in a vacuum. The plain ordinary meaning has to mean something. And it means, and it's in a person of ordinary skill in the art, whether he or she is looking at the intrinsic evidence, would understand, this is how I'm going to apply this term. It means what it says.
What about figure 3? You've got a service consumer requesting service and then a registry determining the service. Figure 3 of, I guess we pronounce it Maurer-Hayes.
Well, figure 3 of Maurer-Hayes, yes, Your Honor.
Right.
Right, so the figure, and this is exactly what we were saying in our briefing. When you look at figure 3 of Maurer-Hayes, there's a request. then there's certain policies that are applied. So the requesting application of the client will make a request for a web service. Then there's a bunch of policies that are applied. And then at the in block 306, it says apply, and then you return a provider or providers best able to perform the service. And then in block 308, it says identify provider best able to perform the service. And then it stops. It doesn't say what happens after that identification of the best available server. And what we said, and whereas in Pruitt, it has exactly the same process. But at the end,
Judge Steik, what I'm struggling with is your framing of the issue. If the board articulated the exactly correct claim construction, and this is not, in fact, a question of law claim construction appeal, then really your appeal is focused on the application of that claim construction to the prior art, and that falls into the substantial evidence territory. Is that accurate?
Well, Your Honor, as we said, what the board found, and what were the primary purpose of appeal, and this is on Appendix 36, what the board said was, we do not agree that Pruitt's disclosure in the board's appeal decision, that's the appeal decision in the file history, regarding Pruitt are relevant to the determination of whether the claim subject matter would have been obvious over Nauer-Hayes and Lye. And then they also said what's also irrelevant is that Nauer-Hayes provides the same, substantially same disclosure as Pruitt, and what's also, the board found was irrelevant was the Netflix's expert, his acknowledgement that the process in Pruitt and the process in Nauer-Hayes are the same. And the board,
he didn't answer my question at all. Where my trouble is I think the same trouble Judge Steik articulated right out of the gate, which is trying to understand what your appeal really is. Is it an appeal of claim construction, which is a question of law, or is it an appeal of the application of that claim construction to a particular reference, which is a question of fact that we review for substantial evidence? Just tell me which of those two buckets your appeal falls in to start.
The application of the claim construction. So, and this is a question of relevancy. The board found that this evidence is irrelevant. Relevancy is a question of law.
Well, it's not relevant if it's not a question of claim construction. If it's a question of the application of the plain ordinary meaning of the claim to the facts of this case, as Chief Judge Moore said, it's a question of substantial evidence. And in correspondingly in the jury trial context, we've held if there's no claim construction, you just ask whether the reasonable meaning of the claim language is properly applied to the reference in question. And it's not, you know, it's not de novo review, it's substantial evidence. And so don't you have a problem with that?
No, Your Honor. The first step, obviously, in every invalidity analysis is scope of the claims, plain ordinary meaning. And the plain ordinary meaning is informed by all the intrinsic evidence. So what we're saying is the court didn't apply the plain and ordinary meaning of the term correctly in view of the prosecution history and the other intrinsic evidence in this case. And by doing so, because at the end of the day, after the board's decision, it's not possible to understand how Pruitt, which was distinguished in the file history through the claim amendment, how that falls outside of the scope of the claims, but yet Nauer-Hayes disclosure, which is identical for all practical purposes for this appeal, would fall inside the claim and therefore invalidate. So it's the scope of the claims that is at issue. So that is a claim construction issue. We're not saying that the board applied the incorrect words to the claim. We're saying that they applied the claim construction incorrectly in view of the intrinsic evidence. So we're not saying that the board...
But that's exactly what Hewlett-Packard says you can't do in the district court context. I don't see why this is any different.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, the issue is that a person of ordinary skill is going to have reviewed all of the intrinsic evidence.
Well, Hewlett-Packard says you don't do. You do not sort of have a alternative claim construction approach when there's been no claim construction. If there's no claim construction, you just look at the words. You don't look at the prosecution history. That's what Hewlett-Packard says. And you haven't explained to me why it's any different when the board is doing this than when the district court is doing this.
because the board didn't, when the board applied the term, which is the term at issue, and Nauer-Hayes discloses, and as we mentioned in the briefing, maybe this is the best way to explain it then. In the Nauer-Hayes briefing, after you get to block 308, it doesn't say what happens. But then with the exact same phraseology, identifying best available in figure five, the reference says exactly that, that the client can decide whether to use that one identified server. And as you look at the file history, if that happens, that is client input. And so the Nauer-Hayes reference doesn't invalidate, doesn't disclose limitation two for exactly the same reason that Pruitt was distinguished. So it is the board misapplied the term at issue, limitation two, when it looked at the Nauer-Hayes reference, because Nauer-Hayes reference discloses client input, and the board disregarded that evidence, and that the analysis the board applies looking at the Nauer-Hayes reference is informed by, among other things, the intrinsic evidence, including the prosecution history, where the board in the appeal decision looked at the reference and did exactly the same thing and said this client input is impermissible. This makes it fall outside the scope of the claim. So even if, regardless of the claim construction issue, the board misapplied the term to the evidence because the evidence discloses client input the same way that Pruitt discloses client input, and therefore both of those references should fall outside the scope of the claims. And when you look at the totality of the Nauer-Hayes reference, everything speaks to the fact that the client is making the decision. Because remember, the claim at issue is a method for connecting to a web service. So you have to request the service, you have to identify or select the server, then you look up the address, then you make the connection. That selection in Nauer-Hayes is made by the client, exactly the same way that selection is made by the client in Pruitt. So the board looked at these references, found that the client made the decision, but then found that all this evidence related to Pruitt, which informs how that term should be applied, is irrelevant. So, Your Honor, if you don't have any other questions, I will save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very good. Mr. Ponder.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Chris Ponder for Appellee Netflix. I'd like to start with the substantial evidence that supports the Board's finding that Nauer-Hayes' Figure 3 satisfies Limitation 1B, because Nauer-Hayes...
Well, I'd rather you start with the question that we were struggling with, which is this appeal related to claim construction or related to the application of claim construction to a piece of prior art?
Netflix believes it's the issue here is substantial evidence, whether substantial evidence...
That's not what I asked. I didn't ask what you thought the standard of review was. I asked you whether you thought this appeal was an appeal of claim construction or whether you think this appeal is an appeal of the application of claim construction to a particular prior art reference.
I believe it's the application of the claim language to the prior art reference.
Okay, so... The one thing that jumped out at me that caused me pause when I read the board's opinion is that sort of statement that seems strange to me, that the prosecution history is irrelevant. Irrelevant. That's a big word. Mm-hmm. If this were claim construction, if I understood this to be a question of claim construction, would you agree the prosecution history is always relevant to a claim construction analysis?
Yes, I believe the prosecution history is always relevant in a claim construction analysis, Your Honor.
I think so too, and so that's why I was trying to tease out in this argument whether or not this was a claim construction appeal, because then that statement by the board would really bother me, or is it the application of a determined claim construction, which is not on appeal, to a particular prior art reference, in which case that statement I don't think bothers me as much?
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe if you're referring to the statement on page 36 of the final written decision, mm-hmm. and if I may, I'd like to explain how that statement in the context of what the board was addressing there was actually the issue Judge Dyke raised about whether it's proper to compare prior art to prior art. I believe that is exactly what the board was saying. And if we can turn to 36.
Can I just ask, why would it be irrelevant to compare prior art to prior art theoretically? I'm not talking about this case, but in general, suppose that you had a continuation application, right? So these two pieces of prior art have identical specs. Wouldn't there be a problem with the board saying that the identical language, verbatim, the entire spec is identical, the claims were allowed over it because that doesn't meet the limitation, but then in an IPR, the exact same spec comes back and the board says these claims are invalid in light of it. That feels wrong to me. I'm not really sure how to work through it in my head.
Well, I think if we had those facts here, but we do not have those facts. This is not an issue where you can take Pruitt and compare it directly to Norhaus and say, oh, it's the exact same language. The difference between Norhaus and Pruitt is Norhaus has the teaching that the server makes the selection, and that's made clear in paragraph 28. In comparison...
Let me tell you, I agree with you. I agree with everything you're saying. You got a friendly judge here, all right? But the one thing that troubles me is that goes to the merits of why it's okay for the board to reject the comparison, but it doesn't go to that relevance question. Because what you just sort of conceded is, well, maybe there are circumstances where it is in fact relevant, and that makes me uncomfortable. I agree with you, and I think the board gave us enough analysis that I can probably decide the case exactly the way you articulated it. But you see my concern? I can imagine hypothetical scenarios where it would surely be relevant. It's not completely irrelevant, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think the problem here is that we don't really have a dispute over what the claim language says or what the claim language means, that it has to be determination by the client.
Well, there'd have to be such a comparison if this were a claim construction exercise, right? That's exactly what you would do in claim construction, looking at the prosecution history to see what the prior art was and how it was overcome. That would be highly relevant in claim construction. But if it's not claim construction, it would seem not to be relevant.
I believe that's correct, Judge Dyke, that in claim construction, trying to find out the meaning of the claims, you would look at the prior art reference that was distinguished or discussed in the prior art history as opposed to the prior art reference that you're adjudicating the invalidity over.
Okay, but now we're going to go back because I feel like, quite frankly, you said yes to both of us, and I think that's not probably possible. What I'm trying to figure out here is it irrelevant? What about my example? What it's not claim construction. The board issues a claim construction. Everybody's okay with the claim construction. And then the piece of prior art is identical because it's a continuation application. So the spec's identical. And once it's the claim's allowed and the next time it's rejected or rendered invalid, and like it seems like it would be relevant, like the degree of identicality between the reference over which the claim was allowed and the reference that the claim is now denied on, even in the application process. That's where I'm struggling. I'm struggling just the concept of relevance. I'm not actually struggling with your case.
Okay.
At least from my perspective, you're going to win. But, so, and I can only speak for myself. But what I'm struggling with is just the giant concept that it's never relevant. And I think you nailed it for me, which is that's not the way they were saying relevance. They were saying it's not relevant to have to compare these two prior art references, maybe. I'm wondering how broad or how narrow that relevant finding was by the board.
Well, I would say it seems in your hypothetical, we're talking about the continuation application, so presumably there's some difference in the language, and then you're having the same prior reference asserted against the different applications. The earlier application is successful, then you have this later continuation. In the continuation application example I think you gave, you're looking at the prior art reference, again, to figure out, well, what is the difference in the claim scope between the parent application and the continuation? So that's more in the claim construction context as opposed to applying the claim language.
No, you wouldn't be looking at the claim scope. The claim scope's irrelevant. It's all about the disclosure. Who cares what the prior art claims? It's about what the spec discloses. That's what's going to be used as
yes.
The prior art. So I don't think that's the right answer, but I don't know what the right answer is. I don't think that's it. Or maybe I didn't understand it. If you want to try again, go for it. But.
Okay. Well, I think the other difference is that you're having a reference that's been squarely addressed in two different proceedings, and you're looking for consistency in the analysis of the disclosure in one particular prior art reference against.
Yeah, so maybe it's like an arbitrary and capriciousness argument almost. And I'm just trying to figure out what to do in my mind with hypotheticals I can come up with where I think there's, it might be relevant, but
yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Isn't it your point that the board didn't make a broad generalization? It simply said, we don't agree that Pruitt's disclosure and the board's decision regarding Pruitt are relevant to the determination of whether the claim subject matter would have been obvious over Nauer, Hayes, and Lye under 103. That's a very specific statement regarding these claims and these references.
I believe that's correct, Judge Lurie. And just to go back to page 36.
It's a narrow thing. The board didn't say it's never relevant to consider a piece of prior art and how likely it is the other piece of prior art, even in the application stage. They did not conclude, just to be clear, that that is always irrelevant or should be treated as irrelevant.
I believe that's correct. I think when you look at the paragraph immediately preceding the sentence that we're concerned about,
yeah.
We see that what is the patent owner asserting in the argument that they're looking at is this argument that one, they say, one, petitioner has established no material difference between the respective disclosures of Pruitt and Norhaus, basically. Compare Pruitt and Norhaus, there's no difference. Two, Avago says the board's decision on appeal was correct. And three, based on those two factors, you should find that the claim has overcome. So that was the argument they were saying, and saying they were saying that's not relevant to what we're supposed to do here under 103. And it's clear when you look at the second sentence after they said that, they say, as correctly pointed out petitioner, what is relevant to the obviousness inquiry is the scope and content of the asserted prior art in Norhaus.
Thank you. That clarified quite a bit for me. Do you have anything further that you'd like to add?
Unless there are any other questions, we're fine.
Very good. Mr. Young, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Taking a step back, in my mind, the big picture is the scope and the scope of the second element of Claim 1 and its application. Right? So the first thing you do is to define the scope. The scope is plain and ordinary meaning as informed by the intrinsic evidence, including the prosecution history.
Well, that's claim construction.
Right.
You said this is not a claim construction appeal. You said this is the application stage. That's where we started. That's where Judge's question started, where my question started. And I thought that you put to rest which side of the line this appeal is on.
Yes, Your Honor. It is the application of the claim construction, which the first thing is to figure out the scope. And when the board was applying the claim construction under the plain ordinary meaning as informed by the intrinsic evidence in that application, the board found that this evidence involving Pruitt, their experts' acknowledgement that Pruitt and Nauer-Hayes operate the same, the board said that is irrelevant. And the point is, when you look at the Nauer-Hayes reference with respect to its application or its comparison to Claim 2, the same things that are going on in Pruitt are the same things that are going on in Nauer-Hayes. And there was no findings that Nauer-Hayes, that selection process was materially different as it relates to the claims. Yes, it does identify the best available server, but then the reference says that the client still has to make that decision. If the client makes the decision, then it doesn't fall within the scope of limitation 2, which was added during prosecution to get around the exact same type of system and distinguish it. And again, take the scope of the claim and narrow it from a claim scope that could cover both figures 1 and 2 of the patent down to a smaller scope, which would exclude the situation where the client is the one making the final selection to use the server to receive the web service. So it is the application of the claim construction applied to Nauer-Hayes, but that application is still informed by the intrinsic evidence. And exactly the reason that the second part of limitation 2 was added to is to get around the exact type of system that Pruitt discloses. So I know that I'm out of time, but if you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer.
We thank both counsel for the argument. This case is taken under submission.